Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1, my new book featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. Available now at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. The city of New York has been the epicenter of American music ever since Duke Ellington told composer Billy Strayhorn to take the A train from Brooklyn to Harlem in 1940. Sinatra, The Dolls, Run DMC, The Ramones, The Big Apple looms large in the works of so many iconic musical artists, but none more so than the garage rock legends, the Fuzz Tones. Founded in New York by Rudy Petrucci in 1980, the group became a mainstay in the New York underground before relocating to Los Angeles shortly after the release of their first album, the now classic Lysergic Emanations. From there, they became a worldwide phenomenon with multiple studio albums, an uncountable number of live performances, and a throng of fans who follow the band with a cult-like devotion. But Petrucci and company never forgot from whence they came, and now celebrating an incredible four decades of rock and roll perversion, the Fuzz Tones have put together a new album of studio recordings that pays homage to their home city, simply titled NYC. The album features the band's special twist on classics by the Ramones, the Cramps, Dead Boys, The Heartbreakers, The Fugs, Mink DeVille, Patti Smith, New York Dolls, and of course Sinatra's New York, New York, which has been made available as a digital single on all platforms. As Petrucci explains, New York has always been at the core of the Fuzz Tones entity, so what better way to celebrate 40 years of Fuzz than a tribute to the music that drew us there? Their brand new release, NYC, will be available on both Digipak CD and limited edition colored vinyl starting October 16th via Cleopatra Records. Please welcome guitarist, songwriter, actor, and leader for garage rock legends The Fuzz Tones, Rudy Petrucci, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Rudy.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man. Congratulations on 40 years of Fuzz.
Thank you so much.
Does it seem like 40 years?
Yeah. To be honest, yeah. It does. It's been a long, long road. Mostly a good road.
Well, I understand you were born in D.C. So was I. I was brought up in D.C.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, when did you leave D.C.?
I was born in the George Washington Hospital, and I was there till I was 4 years old. And then we moved to Pennsylvania, or as I like to call it, Pennsylvania, the only southern state north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Huh. Yeah, it's a shame you didn't stay longer in D.C., because actually D.C. had a really cool music scene, you know?
Well, actually, before the Fuzz Tones, I had a band called Teen Appeal.
Right.
And we were very big in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We played there all the time in 76 and 77.
You know, the Fuzz Tones, they call you guys an American garage rock revival band. You guys were formed in 1980. I began my radio career in 1979, so I'm very familiar with all the music that came out at that time. A very eclectic mixture of music, from new wave to disco to punk. I mean, everything was on the radio, and I did Top 40. But you guys would have been huge in the 60s, man. I mean,
yeah, I'd like to think that.
Yeah, especially.
But then again, I think we might have been maybe a little too much for the 60s, because an element of our music is the more hard-driven stuff, like Stooges and MC5, and
right.
There's definitely a punk element, a 70s punk element to our energy level. So we might have been just a little bit too heavy duty for the 60s.
Well, that probably would have separated you from the other guys, you know? I mean, you know, guys like MC5, and they were pretty heavy for that time.
Absolutely. Well, they were a big influence on us. When I try to describe our music to people who are not familiar with garage, I tend to say, well, we're kind of like if the Doors and the early Stones music was played by the MC5.
You know, that's perfect.
People a rough idea.
I agree with you 100% because, you know, when I listen to the new album, I heard a lot of early Stones, you know, and I agree with you 100%. That's a perfect analogy there of how you guys sound. Huh.
Yeah.
During that time of the, I think you mentioned it once before, there's a brief period of psychedelia in the 60s that, you know, like the Electric Prunes, Music Machine, you know, all those guys, Question Mark and the Mysterians. That it was a brief period, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really pretty much just from 1966 to 67.
Uh-huh.
And then psychedelic music came in and turned it into something a little more serious, more artsy, kind of less teenage.
Right, right. But the top 40 psychedelic music, the you know, the stuff that made it to the radio was excellent. You know?
Oh yeah!
It
My God! Yeah, if you listen to the Nuggets album, mm-hmm. which was really the first collection of what we now call garage rock,
right.
Because we did not call it that in the '60s. That was a name that was put on it later by mm-hmm. critics. But if you listen to that album, there's some incredible music by bands who really only had one hit, like the Blues Magoos or the Music Machine, or the Seeds. They only had one hit, and a lot of people never heard anything else by those bands until the Fuzz Tones came out and covered some of their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, if you really listen to, you know, I was a big record collector. I used to go to conventions and things like that, and of course find those type of albums. You know, find another Seeds album that did not have Pushing Too Hard on it. You know, I was really
into
experimenting and finding all that good stuff. So, but you kind of have to be a musical connoisseur, you know, to really find, you know, be interested in that kind of stuff and go beyond
Definitely.
Top 40. Yeah.
It's funny because I started playing in bands in 1966. And we did the Seeds, and we did a lot of Fugs and Velvet Underground and stuff.
Right.
But most of what we did, at first at least, was just the easiest stuff on the radio.
Because
mm-hmm. Let's face it, I was 14 years old. I wasn't that hot on guitar. You know, I knew some chords and some really, really simple leads. So, like a lot of teenage bands, we covered Louie Louie, Gloria, Hang On Sloopy,
right.
Hey Joe. The really, really simple stuff. But what you got to realize is that was stuff from the radio. That was Top 40.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't call it garage. And when the Fuzz Tones started, when I first started thinking about doing the Fuzz Tones was 1979, I had been in Teen Appeal, and we were doing a lot of 60s-oriented stuff, but it was much more poppy. We were influenced by bands like the Monkees,
mm-hmm. Right.
And we played with a punk outlook. You know, our lyrics were punky, but we had three-part harmony, so it was kind of a combination of punk and 60s bubblegum. But when the Fuzztones started, I had kind of revived my interest in what they now call garage, and I can't honestly tell you why. I just started thinking back to that kind of music, and I got interested again. And I went to a record convention, and at the time, garage wasn't popular whatsoever.
Right.
And I just decided I was going to buy some albums of some bands that I barely remembered, the Seeds, the Count Five, to see what else they did. I had only ever heard Push and Do Hard or Psychotic Reaction.
Exactly.
And the thing is, his albums were really cheap at the record convention, like $2 each.
Exactly.
Because nobody was listening to that stuff.
Yep.
So I bought like a pile, and I went home and I listened to all of it, and I just went nuts over it. You know, because it was familiar. It was a style of music I played when I was a teenager. So it was familiar, but yet it was new. And that's what inspired us to start the Fuzztones. We just thought, man, wouldn't it be a trip to play this kind of stuff in 1980?
Yep.
And when we started playing it, it was like we came from outer space. Nobody knew how to react to it at all. And it took about 2 or 3 years before we actually caught on.
Well, you know, it was a weird time, 1980. You know, like I said, I was in radio, and you had this, you had Donna Summer playing, you had the Cars, you had Blondie, you know, you had Lionel Richie. You know, it was all across the board. You know, and you know, I was in Top 40.
Oh, and don't forget Styx.
Styx. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Boston. All this
Coliseum rock. You know, this really pretentious, overblown stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. So it was a tough time. I mean, it was very eclectic period. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, man. I might get in trouble for this, but I like you guys a lot more than I like the Ramones. You know,
well, thank you.
There's a big difference. because I like that psychedelic sound.
If you want to really compare the two bands, listen to Acid Eaters.
Acid Eaters.
That was their album that was influenced by the Fuzztones.
Really?
Yeah, very few people know this. But after Marky Ramone got kicked out of the Ramones, we lost our drummer and our lead guitar player.
Yeah.
And Marky auditioned for us.
Really?
And Marky very much wanted to join the Fuzztones, and he practiced with us for 2 weeks. And I hate to say this, because he's great as a Ramon, but he couldn't swing.
Right.
He couldn't get the swing of our music, and we actually had to turn him down.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know Marky. He's been on the show a couple of times.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, crazy thing, you know.
Yeah.
We also tried out the guitarist for Sparks. Off the Big Beat album. That guy, Jeff Salen, fantastic guitar player.
Yeah.
But just didn't fit our style.
Well, you guys are more advanced than they are, you know. I mean, you know, like the Sex Pistols and all those guys, the Dead Kennedys. I know you actually auditioned for the Dead Kennedys, right?
No, the Dead Boys.
Oh, the Dead Boys. Okay, I thought it was the Dead Kennedys, yeah.
No, I auditioned for the Dead Boys and actually played one show with them. It was a benefit for Punk Magazine at CBGB's.
Right.
And the night I played with them, the bill was the Dead Boys, the Dictators, David Johansen, Patti Smith, Debbie Harry, Blondie, and Richard Hell, and Suicide.
Oh, wow.
All on one bill.
That's incredible for such a small venue.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, really. Yeah. And then they told me I was in the band. And I lived in Pennsylvania at the time, so I went home, and I packed all my stuff, and I waited, and I waited. And about 2 weeks later, Jimmy Zero called me up and said, well, we decided to take our old bass player from Cleveland. So I said, okay. And I formed Tina Peel and moved to New York by myself.
And, you know, Tina Peel was a good band. You guys played, I mean, you were pretty successful. You were on a lot of TV shows, the Uncle Floyd show.
Yeah, we were on 3 or 4 TV shows. Yeah. We were on the radio, on big radio, mm-hmm. The two biggest New York stations. I don't remember their names anymore. But at that time, it was not uncommon for them to play up-and-coming bands.
Right.
And we headlined the Ritz, we headlined Hurrah, the biggest clubs. And it's funny because I broke up the band specifically to form the Fuzztones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of crazy because we went from making a lot of money to making almost nothing. We went for 2 years making like $20 a show.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta follow your heart, basically. You know?
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, we knew what kind of music we wanted to play, and uh-huh. we stuck it out. And thank God we did, you know.
Yeah. But a couple of songs I like from Tina Peel, Pajama Party, you know, the sax in that, and Fifi Goes Pop. That's cool.
Yep. Yeah, that was a minor hit.
Yeah.
In New York.
Right.
Jukebox hit. It was on all the clubs, jukeboxes and stuff.
Yeah. Great music. Good music, man.
Thank you.
But I'm glad you formed the Fuzztones, though, because, you know, that's more my style.
Well, it's funny. You know, we formed Tina Peel in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and we brought it to New York, but we were living in the Lower East Side,
right.
and it was very, very rough there. A lot of gangs, a lot of drug use,
mm-hmm.
And in the 10 years I lived there, I saw nine dead bodies.
Wow.
I saw 3 murders, a lot of rapes. It was very rough.
Jeez.
And it was very hard to keep a band like Tina Peel together, because Tina Peel had this innocent
mm-hmm.
Sort of appeal.
Right.
It wasn't that innocent. I mean, all our lyrics were very twisted. But we had a very wholesome image.
Uh-huh.
Purposely wholesome because of the dead lyrics, you know. And I just found that the more we were there, the harder we got.
Mm-hmm.
We had to play tougher music. We had to represent where we lived, you know.
Exactly. Well, you,
and the Fuzztones definitely represent New York City.
Well, you were appealing to the record companies at that time. You know, I bet they were happy with them, with Tina Peel, you know.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm sure the record companies were happy with Tina Peel, you know, for that reason.
No, not really. We had a couple of big labels following us around,
mm-hmm.
but they liked our music. But they were a little hesitant because we were kind of, you know, we had songs like Penis Between Us.
Right, yeah.
It's funny because now that could be on the radio. You know?
But that's funny.
Not in 1978, you know?
Oh, jeez. That's great.
So I think that's what held us back. You know, we, Fifi Goes Pop. I mean, it was about putting a poodle in a microwave oven to dry it off. That kind of stuff. You know, I mean, it's tongue in cheek. It's funny. But a lot of people were very, a lot of record companies were very hesitant to make our, they didn't think it was commercial enough,
right,
you know, because
right.
of the lyrics, and I guess at the time it wasn't really.
Yeah, see, I can identify with that, because, you know, when punk came out, and I was in broadcasting school in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, we started a band called The Drugs, and we had a song called Abortion Baby, so I know where you're coming from.
That's funny, because there was a band in New York called The Sick Fucks, and they did a song called My Baby Had a Teenage Abortion.
Oh, man.
And of course, they also had the big hit, Chop, Chop, Chop Up Your Mother. Of course, they didn't get any radio airplay either.
Of course not.
We were a little more subtle than that.
But, you know, it was a fun time.
It was. Yeah. It was. I mean, the reason why we did this album is because that was the best time of my life musically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was so much going on in New York. Literally, every night there was some great band playing somewhere.
Yeah.
And usually there were 2 or 3, you know, so you would go to one club and then have to try to get there safely, which was very hard. If you, even if you could afford a taxi, they drove like maniacs back then. And if you took a subway, you might get knifed or mugged or whatever.
Jeez.
So it was really a challenge, and it was very exciting. You know, I mean, I actually liked the danger aspect, believe it or not, because it made every night an exciting adventure.
Yeah, it makes
and
a better song.
And they were amazing bands. I mean, you know, the Heartbreakers played at least once every month.
Right.
Must have seen them 60 times.
Mm-hmm.
There was, Dead Boys were playing all the time.
Yeah.
Cramps, you know, a lot of great stuff.
Oh, yeah, good stuff back then. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I liked, I just lost it. Take Me to the River.
The Talking Heads?
Yeah, the Talking Heads, but, God, who? I just lost it. Oh, they did the Dionne Warwick song, Walk On By. They did it so cool, you know, like a punk version of it. It was great.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. A lot of those bands...
Mm-hmm.
Delved a little bit in garage punk as well. I mean,
yeah.
Richard Hell did I Can Only Give You Everything. Teddy Smith did Gloria. Television did Fire Engine by the 13th Floor Elevators. Dictators did California Sun. Dead Boys did Little Girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they all paid homage to the original punk. I mean, 60s garage is the original punk,
right.
You know. It's the original teenage rebellion music.
Well, I think punk goes back to the 60s, in my opinion, you know.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. That's right.
I mean, listen to the Sonics.
Yeah. And how about the Stones? I mean, early, some of the Stones music was kind of punk, I thought.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They're the Bad Boys. You know what's interesting was your relationship with Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was interesting. No, he was a good friend of mine.
Yeah. And, yeah, man, that guy's been around for a long time, but I think he kind of, you know, made a resurgence, I guess, of his career. You kind of helped him out a little bit?
No, I'd like to think so.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when I met him, he wasn't doing very good.
Right.
He was just playing in a rib joint.
Hmm.
In Greenwich Village. And he was playing to about 30 yuppies who were drinking beer, eating ribs, and had absolutely no idea who he was.
Wow.
Was just sitting there playing piano.
Huh.
No band. And he wasn't even playing his own stuff. He was playing R&B hits, you know, by Fats Domino and Big Joe Turner, stuff
right.
like that. And he was doing a three-night stint. So I just went every night, and during his breaks, I talked to him and got to know him. And when I felt we had a rapport, then I propositioned him to let me introduce him to the label that we were on, which was a very small label. And I told him that, you know, it was Midnight Records in New York. But from what I saw, he wasn't doing good at all, and he could use a record. You know, putting a record out. And so I arranged for him to meet the guy who ran that label. And they could never really come to terms because Jay was a little bit unrealistic with his expectations. So what we did was convinced him to do an appearance with the Fuzz Tones live.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked out two of his songs. And he was supposed to rehearse it with us, and he never showed up. So we learned the songs, and the night of the gig, he didn't show up for sound check. So we knew the songs, but we figured he wasn't coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I had rented out a piano, so we had a piano on the side of the stage, and we did our set. And at the end of our set, there he was on the in the wings, standing there, just waiting in full regalia. So we brought him on, and we did the two songs, and I thought that was it. Great, la-di-da.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loved it.
Right.
And the band starts walking off stage, and he goes up to the mic, and he says, "And we ain't even started yet." So we jump back on our instruments, took it to the record label and they put it out, and that was the record. He never went into a studio to cut an album for the label, but we put out these four songs, and they really took off. I mean, it got absolutely nothing but great reviews.
That's awesome.
And he started playing really good venues, and then he started touring, and he started being in movies. So, yeah, I think playing with the Fuzztones helped him a lot.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think so. Yeah. I saw you. You did an interview with Larry King, right?
I did.
I don't want to. I hope you're not buddies with this guy, but I think he's a big idiot.
Larry? Larry King?
I can't stand Larry
Why
King.
Why do you all wear your hat so long?
Exactly.
In or out?
Exactly. What stupid questions does he ask? Holy crap.
Well, if you listen to that interview, you'll see that I was making fun of him the whole time. I mean, you know, the guy was so out of date that I decided it would be really fun to use terminology from his day. So, you know, he'd say something like, did you ever get a haircut? And I'd say, yeah, when I was a tyke.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody uses the word tyke. That's something they used in the 40s, you know. So I talked to him that way through the whole interview. And the audience thought it was pretty hilarious. I don't think he realized I was making fun of him.
Yeah, he says, can you hum me one of your tunes? Yeah, right.
Yeah. They're unhummable, right?
You know, all these so-called legends, they don't do any homework when it comes to, you know, musicians, you know, which is, it's a travesty. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it bugs me a lot.
But I'll tell you what, I was really happy to have gone on his show because, I mean, the guy's huge.
Yep.
A huge name, you know. And I owed that to Rodney Bingenheimer. He's the one who took me and introduced me.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any kind of side job that helps you financially? I just talked to Albert Bouchard of Blue Oyster Cult. He was a drummer, original guy.
Transmaniacal.
Yeah, just talked to him, and I didn't know this. He's a music teacher for a long, long time. He was also a taxi driver, and he did all this after Blue Oyster Cult because he needed the money.
Oh yeah.
So,
believe it or not, no.
No, huh?
No. When we were at our peak,
right,
in about 1985 to 87, 88, we were really big.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing for 1,500 people a night, headlining. And often, we'd be on festivals playing up to 20,000 people a night. But we had a very crooked record label. We had a very crooked booking agency, and we made no money. Somebody did, but it wasn't
Somebody
us.
Did, yeah.
But in my later years, after I moved to Berlin, I got a tour manager who was honest, and also my girlfriend. So and the organist of the band.
Oh, good.
So that helped very much.
Yeah.
Because suddenly we were making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
We just redistributed where the money would go. We cut out the middleman. We cut out roadies.
Mm-hmm.
We cut out merchandise people. We did everything ourselves. You know, we no longer brought equipment with us. We had the clubs provide it. We changed everything.
Really? Very smart.
And I'm able to make a living.
Yeah.
So I just bought a house.
Congratulations.
Doing fine.
Excellent.
So it's funny because we don't play for anywhere near 1,500 people anymore.
Well, you're big in that area, right? I know Susie Quattro. She's in England, and she's never left England. And the same thing, you know, she's big over there, you know.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, we only toured once in America for 2 weeks.
Right.
In the Midwest, mm-hmm. when all we had was one song on a compilation album.
Right.
Once we got signed to RCA, we got an offer to do a cross country tour from the famous booking agency FBI,
mm-hmm.
which I'm trying to think of the guy's name. There were three brothers. The Copelands. Stuart Copeland is a drummer for the Police, and Ian Copeland was the booking agency, and Miles Copeland was the record label, IRS.
Yep, I know Miles.
So they kind of had the music business by the balls, you know? And he's the one who arranged for us to do our first two-week tour. And that two-week tour, when we were practically unknown, we made up to $2,000 a night. And then when we got a deal with RCA, he calls me up and offers me this big tour. Headlining. $200 a night.
Oh my gosh, what happened?
Yeah. And I shocked him by saying no.
You shocked him, right?
So we were blackballed. And to this day, we've never toured America again. 40 years.
I've heard mixed reviews about Miles. I've had him on the show.
Well, this was Ian.
Oh, it was Ian. It wasn't Miles. Okay.
But you should ask the Cramps about Miles.
Yeah, I know.
Same deal. He kept them in court for a couple of years. They couldn't record.
It's crazy business.
I'm the kind of person who likes to name names because a lot of these people are really crooked and they've really screwed bands over the years.
It's a shame.
So people really need to know who they are.
I agree. 100%. You know, I talked to Tommy James about, you know, I mean, he had the mafia running his label.
Oh, yeah. Screaming Jay had that problem, too.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you know, but I wrote my autobiography,
I heard,
I guess, 4 or 5 years ago, and and I go into a lot of detail, lot of names.
I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to promote the hell out of it for you, okay?
Cool.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk about the new album, okay? Here's what I heard. Here's the kind of bands I heard. Oh, by the way, the band I was trying to think of that did the Dionne Warwick thing, the Stranglers.
That was an English band. We played with them in Tina Peel.
Good band. Really good band.
Good band.
But I hear a lot of things in your music. I hear the Pretty Things. I hear the Electric Prunes, the Doors, the Seas, the Rolling Stones, the Music Machine, Hawkwind, Stranglers, Question Mark and the Mysterians, and I can go on and on.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's great.
But not just 60s stuff. I mean, you can hear the Stooges.
Oh, yeah.
You can hear, Blue Cheer.
Yep.
You can hear the Fugs. You can hear Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis, Bo Diddley, Sonny Boy Williamson.
Well, I'm giving you 5 stars,
a lot of stuff.
Five stars all the way.
I mean, they've all influenced it some.
5 stars all the way. Favorite songs, Flip Your Wig, you know, one of my favorites.
Wayne County, yeah.
Yeah. You guys did a great version of that tune.
Thanks.
Yep. I want to say, pronounce this right, is it Psilocybe?
Psilocybe, yeah.
Psilocybe. That's
Magic Mushroom.
Is that you singing on that tune?
Yeah.
But you sound like Jim Morrison, man.
Thank you. One of my faves. Big influence on me.
Very cool. Talk a little bit about the album, about making it.
Well, my concept was to basically do an homage to the music from New York that influenced us in one way or another. And, you know, to pay homage to New York City itself. So the song New York, New York by Sinatra, that's an anthem. And I thought, well, let's see if we could make it sound like we wrote it.
Exactly.
So we rearranged it to, you know, to be a Flintstones song, and that starts out the album.
Yep.
So it's an introduction to what it's going to be about. And we cover Richard Hell, Patti Smith, New York Dolls, some stuff that isn't that well known, like the Fugs. We do a Fugs song that I actually played in 1966 in my first band. We do Psilocybe is by a so-called garage revival band from the 80s called the Mad Violets that most people don't know about. There's a song by John Collins on the album. It's called Man and Me. This band, John Collins' band, they opened for Tina Peel, but I honestly don't remember them. I just read in my journal recently. the only song I've ever heard by them is Man in Me. It's on a Max's Kansas City compilation from the late 70s. And it's a great song, so we just decided to put that on. Mink DeVille, we covered them. And I don't remember what else is on there. but kind of like, you know, cool music from New York from...
Yeah.
Two different eras, I guess, from the 60s and from the 70s. And we do it all Fuzzstone style. You know, we don't, Ramones, we cover a Ramones song. Mm-hmm. But we don't do anything like copy the music at all. You know, I mean, we definitely have rearranged everything so it sounds like a Fuzzstone song.
Oh, you guys definitely have your own sound. I mean, you know.
Thank you. We ought to. We've been doing it for 40 years.
Yeah.
So I think we've perfected a style.
You have great style. A couple of tunes that really sounded like early Stones was Skin Flowers, and another one was Let Me Dream with the harmonica.
Oh, yeah,
opening.
Well, that's Mink DeVille,
yep.
Let Me Dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got that kind of John Lee Hooker boogie type rhythm to it, and like that Brian Jones harmonica sort of riff going through it. So, yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah. Killer riffs, man. Your guitar, I believe it's your guitar, on Transmanicon, is that how you spell it?
Transmanicon.
Transmanicon MC.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a Blue Oyster Cult song.
Yeah.
That's in New York, too.
Great sound on that one. I mean, that was your guitar work, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the only guitarist on the album.
Excellent.
I'm also the bass player, too.
Who needs the rest of the band? You can do like a Todd Rundgren thing, you know. Just
actually, I'm thinking I might do that on the next release. I'd really like to do that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got all the all the talent to do it. Might as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have a studio?
Well, actually, all the vocals are mine too. All the harmonies.
Do you have a studio in your house?
No, I wish.
Yeah.
I have garage bands. That's what I do my demos on, but I mean, that's nothing you could ever, release.
Didn't you guys play
really rough stuff?
Didn't you guys play in a parking lot once, in underground parking lot or something like that?
Yeah, we did. That was our very last Halloween show.
Uh-huh.
We had a place here that we would play every Halloween in Berlin. It was a club.
Mm-hmm.
It was the closest thing Berlin had to CBGB's. It was very similar in atmosphere. It was called the Bassy. And for our last show, we got offered to do the Halloween show in a haunted parking garage. And we just thought, why not do something different? And sounded like a cool idea, but in all honesty, it didn't have the same vibe, and it was freezing cold, and everybody got sick, and we just decided after that we wouldn't do any more Halloween shows. So they've just kind of gone down in history as something really cool that we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a myth now.
But what were the acoustics like in there?
Terrible.
Terrible, huh?
Yeah, just another reason not to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we tried something. I mean, you know, that's the thing about the Fuzzstones. We're not afraid to try something new, something unexpected. I like to do the unexpected.
Right. One thing, you know, Frank Zappa mentioned this, and I thought he was 100% right on this. He said that at one time you had these, you know, cigar-chopping guys that made decisions in the music industry. They didn't know anything about it, but they took a shot. You know what I mean? Because, you know, Frank, his song was very out there. You know, you wouldn't think it would have made top 40 or, you know, even on the radio. But then he said when the hip guys came in that thought they knew everything, they ruined it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I've seen that a million times. We had the same problem with Fuzzstones.
Mm-hmm.
We got signed to Beggar's Banquet. It was a big English label.
Right.
And we recorded the album in heat. And we did it ourselves. We found a small studio that was cheap, but got Mm-hmm. We recorded the album, gave it to them, and they said, it's too rough. We want you to go into a proper studio with a proper producer. Up to that point, we had only produced our own stuff. And a lot of names were bandied about. Like, for instance, Hunt Sales, mm-hmm. from Iggy Pop's band. And, I can't even remember anymore. But people I didn't really feel really grasped what we were trying to do. And we read somewhere in a music magazine that Shel Talmy wanted to get back into the music scene. Now, Shel Talmy was the guy who produced The Who, mm-hmm. The Creation, and The Kinks. So we figured, okay, this guy had hits doing music that was very similar to what we do.
Right.
So if we have to get a name producer, at least he would understand where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a rather large advance. He took it all. We went into a studio and cut a very generic album by the time he was done with it, and used a modern drum sound that I hated,
mm-hmm.
put the organ through the soundboard and made it sound like a synthesizer, even though it was a real 60s Vox organ,
mm-hmm.
and I just hated the record. It was the first record we did that was all original music, so it was a big deal, you know. And consequently, all the reviews were terrible. And it's funny, though. Our fans loved it, loved us anyhow. That's when we were at our height. We were playing for 1,500 people a night. But we lost a lot of our garage following. So 10 years later, I believe, I found a label to put out the original version, and that got great reviews, and that's called Raw Heat.
Raw Heat.
But what an irony,
you know? You know, you made a statement in another interview that was right on, man. I think the interviewer said, if you could change one thing in the music world and it would become a reality, what would that be? And you said mainstream radio would play all styles. There's room for everything. And
yeah,
that's
100%
right.
That's what they did in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, but if you think about it, or if you were there, you'd know that in the 60s, they didn't have the format they
mm-hmm.
have now. You know, like
exactly.
Now it'll be hip-hop radio, blues radio, country radio. But
oldies.
In the 60s, they would play, well, they would call it pop, but it was a huge umbrella. You know, you
right.
could have Frank Sinatra singing That's Life, followed by the Beatles doing We Can Work It Out, followed
exactly.
by the Seeds doing
yep.
Pushing Too Hard,
yep.
followed by Napoleon the 15th doing They're Gonna Take You Away, followed by Prince Buster doing the Ten Commandments, which could never, ever be played now because it's the most misogynist
yep.
thing you ever heard.
How about Arthur Brown and Fire?
Yeah. I mean, you know, a huge array of stuff.
Yep.
Petula Clark doing Downtown, followed by
exactly.
Talk by the Music Machine.
Yeah.
You know. And it's funny, TV shows were the same way, too.
Yep.
The Ed Sullivan Show was the biggest show on TV,
exactly.
variety show. And he would have a juggler, a comedian, and then he'd have a rock and roll band.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, if you think about it, today, that's unheard of.
Yeah.
Nobody does anything like that.
It's sad. Very sad.
It is.
Yeah. Because, you know, I went to school for that. And I became a DJ because of that era, because of the 60s DJs and all that. That's why I did it. Because I love that era. And, you know, there's no reason why they can't do it again. And
I do
this show because I love what I'm doing. It's not because I'm not getting paid, you know. I pay for the time because I love the music. I love these guys I grew up with, you know, and I want to promote them because who else is promoting these guys, you know?
You're absolutely right. And the musicians need people like you to do this, you know, because it has to be a labor of love.
It's got to be a labor of love, right? Exactly right.
I mean, for a while we had little Steven championing this kind of music.
Right.
But as soon as his station, his show got popular, then he started to sneak in Randy Newman, Bruce Springsteen, on and on until it was like hardly recognizable as the quote underground garage.
Yeah.
And this is something else that always happens.
Well, that's the other thing. We had a lot of underground stations. We had a lot of underground stations back then, too, you know, that played stuff nobody ever, you know, heard of. It was great.
Well, that was another thing that was different in the 60s when I grew up, all the way up to the 80s, actually. Me and my friends, we would go to record stores, and we would just go through the bins, and if we saw an album cover that looked intriguing,
exactly,
we would buy it, not having a clue what the music sounded like. But part of the fun was, well, this album cover really looks intriguing. Let's go home and see what it sounds like.
Yep.
And almost all the time, it was great.
Yep.
You know, this is how I learned about the Velvet Underground.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the album because it said Andy Warhol on the cover, and it had a banana that you peeled away.
Yeah.
The original ones, you could peel the banana. and I think it said, look and see on it, you know. I bought the Pearls Before Swine because it had a Hieronymus Bosch album cover, which was fascinating looking, you know. What kind of music would go with that?
Yeah.
A lot of bands. Mothers of Invention freak out because of the cover.
Exactly. Yeah, plus they had a lot of cool stuff. You know, you open up and there's like sometimes a poster, you know. You got to read the liner notes. I mean, it was all interesting, you know. The whole album thing was fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Here's Rudy, here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some really interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Alive or dead?
Yeah, alive or dead.
Oh, absolutely. Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison, yeah.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Iggy Pop. Link Wray.
Oh, I love Link Wray.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Bo Diddley.
Yep.
John Lee Hooker. Probably those.
Yep, great answer. I just had James Williamson on the show.
Oh, Shangri-Las would be good too.
Oh, the Shangri-Las, yeah, that's way out there.
Shangri-Las, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, James Williamson.
Yeah, right, just on. Had him on the show. Yeah. Yeah, he's doing good. He's happy.
What's that now?
He's happy. He's doing all right, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy if you think that before the reunion, he hadn't touched his guitar for years.
That's
and
right.
Years.
That's right.
Amazing.
Yep, that is amazing.
And those reunion shows were fantastic. I saw both the Stooges with the Ashton Brothers and the Stooges with James Williamson, and they're both just fantastic shows.
Yeah, they were.
The Dolls reunions were fantastic as well.
They were ahead of their time, I thought. You know?
God, yes.
Yep.
I was really lucky. I used to hitchhike to New York City in the early 70s when the Wright Band was playing, and I got to see the Dolls twice at Max's Kansas City, which was like really their stomping grounds, front row seat. And I've seen a hell of a lot of bands over the years, and they were the most exciting rock and roll band I ever saw. The combination of their image, which was amazingly enough, not it didn't seem like it was pre-thought out. You'd think dressing as outrageous as they did would be planned, but that's pretty much the way they looked all the time. They lived it, you know. Their cacophonous music was just, to me, it was just the absolute epitome of rock and roll. You know, it was so loose and sloppy, and yet at the same time tight. Their lyrics were so filled with teen angst and really described the confusion of being a teenager and the excitement of being a teenager. And I don't know, I just they blew me away. And it's funny because my favorite bands are the Doors, the Dolls, and the Pretty Things, and they're all quite different from each other.
Did you ever see the movie Let It Ride with David Johansen in it?
I don't think so.
Oh, you gotta see it, man. Richard Dreyfuss I mean, Johansson does a fantastic job in that. He's really funny in it. The whole movie's about him, Dreyfuss having a great day at the racetrack.
His, that doesn't sound familiar at all.
His friend is David Johansson, who's kind of a loser. He never wins anything. But it's a great movie. It's a great movie.
I'll definitely check it out.
Let It Ride. Yeah. I like David Johansen. I think he's pretty cool.
No, he's one of my heroes.
Yep,
for sure.
So
the reunion album had some really amazing material. I mean, the song "Maimed Happiness" is like one of the best songs I've ever heard. The lyrics are just amazing. I mean, he's one of the absolute best lyricists. I put him up there with John Lennon, Bob Dylan, anyone, actually.
Then he comes out and does Buster Poindexter.
That I could live without.
I don't know. Hot, Hot, Hot was kind of neat.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, though. I think it really helped him, because if you listen to his voice on the Dolls' first two albums and then you listen to his voice later, doing Buster Poindexter definitely helped him to develop a range, you know, other than three notes. I mean, the first two Dolls albums, as much as I love them, I mean, it's not much singing. It's more like chanting. And I think, you know, doing Buster Poindexter and then doing his own band, doing stuff, covering the Animals and stuff, I think he learned how to sing, you know. I don't think that's necessarily necessary, you know, because I loved what he did before, but I don't think the original Dolls could have ever done Maimed Happiness.
Right. You know, I'll admit, nobody can cover Eric Burdon's songs better than he. I mean, he does a great job with those Animal tunes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
He's got the range for it, the voice, because, you know, Eric has got that deep voice.
No, I think it was a great idea for him to do the medley. It was one of my favorite things that David Johansen's band did.
Yeah, me too. So, Rudy, when this virus thing ever goes away, do you think you're going to promote the album and go on do some
touring? That was the idea. being this is our 40-year anniversary, we had big plans.
Sure.
We were going to tour to promote the new album, and we have a book coming out. It's a 360-plus page photo history of the band's 40 years. That will be out before the end of the year.
Awesome.
That'll be out on FanPro, is the publisher.
Okay.
And they did my last two books, my autobiographies.
Okay.
And so that will be out probably in about a month. And it's called As Time's Gone, The Legacy of the Fuzztones.
Awesome.
Fuzztones Lysergic Legacy, I think it's called.
Right.
But the actual title is As Time's Gone. And like I said, that was kind of ripped away from us because of this pandemic.
What other countries are you doing over there besides Germany?
I'm a little bitter about it, as I'm sure anyone who lost their job is bitter about
it.
But, you know, it's pretty pretty hard to have a band for 40 years. I'd like to see who else did it besides the Rolling Stones, Pretty Things, and the Fuzztones. Yeah. And, you know, if we get a chance, we'll absolutely promote our 41 years, because probably it won't be till next year before we play again, if we can. I don't know. I mean, to me, honestly, I'm rather pessimistic about all this. I think it's, I think there's a lot more to it than a virus. I think this is a political thing, and I don't think the outcome is going to be very good, so I don't know, but we can certainly hope.
Yeah, it's like...
We want to get back on stage, no doubt about it.
It's like, is there going to be a point where they're saying, okay, you can take your masks off, you know what I mean? I mean, how is this going to happen?
There is. It's already. You can take your masks off to riot, burn down cities.
Yep.
That's okay. You can do that, but don't try to go to a church.
Yeah, exactly.
Or go to school.
Yep.
So it's obviously politically motivated. I don't want to say too much more than that.
I know what you mean. It's like the Twilight Zone. It's horrible what's happening. I agree.
It is 100%. Horrible. If this happened in the 60s, people would have protested in numbers, huge numbers. Mm-hmm. We ended the war.
Yep.
We ended the draft. Mm-hmm. But people today are complacent.
They are complacent.
I can't believe how many people, how many friends of mine have absolutely no problem with wearing a mask. Yeah. What have we been wearing them 8 months now, I think?
Yeah.
And they seem to be okay with wearing them forever.
Yeah.
I was like, eh, I kind of forget it's on. It's no big deal.
Right.
I don't know. To me, it's well, I just don't go along with it, you know.
Yeah, it's just...
But I always had a hard time fitting in with the crowd, so...
Yeah, I agree with you. It's tough on... Man, the musicians are... I really feel for them. Big time.
Yeah. No, it's horrible.
Excuse me.
It's really horrible. Like, it's made a huge dent in our earnings. It takes away a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it was a social thing to go out and gig, you know, meet the fans, entertain people, you know, make people happy. People need it.
They do.
People really need live music, you know. Your soul needs live music. I think everyone is basically their souls are being starved.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it.
I agree. I'm like you. I've been to a million concerts, man, and I still go to them, and it's the only thing that's... It's my release. I go see music, you know. It really is. But but luckily, I get to interview legends like you, and
well, thanks. I really appreciate that.
Rudy, I think I got you covered. We got the new album coming out. It's like any day now, right?
You can buy it online.
Okay.
I don't know if it's in stores. It was supposed to... The release date is officially Friday.
Okay.
October 16th. Some people tell me it's already out. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not out in Berlin. I know that.
I think I saw it on Amazon.
Yes, it's definitely there. And you can buy it directly from Cleopatra as well.
And your book is also available on Amazon, correct?
Yeah, the autobiography is. That's called The Fuzztone.
Mm-hmm.
Not Fuzztones. The Fuzztone.
The Fuzztone.
And the first book is called Raising a Ruckus is the subheader. And the second is The Fuzztone, A Life at Psychedelic Velocity.
I'm definitely going to pick that up. And we're promote the hell out of it. And all my... I got many, many sites out there besides being on radio, and I put all my interviews on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and punch in my name, you're going to see all my episodes are on there as well.
Cool. I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah. Rudy, thank you, man, so much for being on the show today. Good
my
luck
pleasure,
with the new
really.
Album. Nothing but praise for me about the album. That's my style, 100%. And,
I'm really glad you dig it.
I do hope to see you in the U.S. one day, hopefully.
It would be great.
Yeah.
Spread the word.
I will.
Maybe a booking agency will get a hold of us. Get a always reach us at our Facebook page for the Fuzztones.
Excellent. Thanks, Rudy.
Take care of that.
Stay
Thanks
safe,
so much
man.
For the interview.
Okay, take care.
Okay, man.
Take All right. Care. Bye-bye. Purchase the latest release by the Fuzztones entitled NYC. It is a great album. And if you're a lover of 60s psychedelia and punk and a mixture of just about anything rock and roll, you're going to love this album. NYC will be available on both Digipak CD and limited edition colored vinyl starting officially October 16th at Cleopatra Records. It's available now, I believe, on Amazon.com. You can also stream the new New York, New York song by the Fuzztones. That's also available right now on YouTube. For more information about Rudy Petrutti and the Fuzztones, visit www.fuzztones.net. That's their official website. They're also on Facebook, www.facebook.com/TheFuzztonesOfficial. Very, very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for arranging this interview with Rudy Petrutti and the dynamic duo, of course, of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. We are going on 5 years now. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And my new book is out. It's entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1, Chronicles, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us All Free. You can order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. Stay safe, be healthy, everybody. God bless you. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.